at JM in the AM. Well, I've been touting the fact that I very, very much have been looking forward to this morning and to this conversation. Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter is here, a well-known Orthodox rabbi, somebody who is a professor of Jewish history and Jewish thought, somebody who has had some of the most distinguished pulpits in our greater Jewish community, and was reunited with us when Shalom Lamb brought to our attention the incredible work of Operation Benjamin. Those of you who recall that conversation, you'll remember that Operation Benjamin had quite a Memorial Day just a couple of weeks ago, which we'll talk about. Operation Benjamin is devoted to preserving the memories of American Jewish servicemen and women who made the ultimate sacrifice while defending the cause of freedom during World War II. Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter, a pleasure and an honor to welcome you to JM in the AM.
And the pleasure and the honor is mine, without any question.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's great to be here. We thank you so much for all your incredible work on behalf of our entire community.
I appreciate that very much. Yesterday, and everything, it's always funny, you know, the context of when conversations on the air take place. Yesterday, I was asked to speak to a group of students graduating from elementary school, which, if you do the math, means that they were born in 2009. And I am trying to convey to them some of the great historical episodes that have happened over the last 30, 40 years during my career. And, without any criticism, you know, it's not their fault. Sometimes some blank stares because they're not familiar with any of these stories. And now I wonder, and we'll get to Operation Benjamin, obviously, that's our focus. But I wonder if you, as time goes by, worry about the current generations and the fact that World War II, such an important landmark milestone event for the free world, that its history and its story is starting to wane away.
So it's fascinating you say that, because I had an exactly similar experience. You had it yesterday. I had it on Monday. I went to speak to a group of eighth graders in a very prominent local day school. They asked me to come to speak about my father who liberated the Buchenwald concentration camp.
Right.
They had a unit on the Holocaust, and they were talking about liberators, and then they got to my father, and then the dean of students, who was a student of mine, asked me to come to speak to them. And of course, I was very honored to do so. I always welcome an opportunity to speak about my father's life.
Sure.
And this is after, we're now in June. This is after at least a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months, and it's really hard to connect because it's ancient history. I try to connect when I ask them, how many of you are great-grandchildren of Holocaust survivors? So maybe 20% raised their hand. So I had something. They had some connection. But you're absolutely right. As time goes on, this becomes the Spanish expulsion. This becomes the Khmelnytsky massacres. The fear is, but it's realistic that as time goes on, as survivors pass away, as four generations go by, it's something in deep memory that hopefully people talk about sometime.
And this is the way life is, and we're just learning that lesson now in this generation. I am sure that our predecessors went through this, as you pointed out, countless times in our history. So it's different. You know, we're talking about people who can't relate to episodes of World War II either directly or through their parents. You know, people in my generation certainly had a prior generation to lean on when it came to the memory, even those living in the United States, when it came to the memory of being around during that terrible period of time followed by the victory, thank God, of the Allies. So for those who don't know, American involvement in World War II began at Normandy. Many have seen the film, the very raw black and white footage. Many have learned and studied that's where American involvement began, with literally a arrival of American troops at Normandy, France. And if I have it correct, that is where you and the Operation Benjamin group spent Memorial Day. Is that right?
Yes, yes. I would say that the general involvement of America in World War II was precipitated by the bombing of Pearl Harbor at the end of 1941,
right.
And already they're starting to gear up. My father volunteered for the United States Army to fight Hitler in 1942. So there's already a lot of progress going on. But the real move happened at D-Day, which was the beginning of the end for the Germans. It was the time when the counteroffensive was launched. And that's exactly where we were on Memorial Day. It was very meaningful to be there, particularly on Memorial Day. There's a magnificent Normandy American Military Cemetery that has some 9,500 graves.
How far from the area where American troops landed?
It's in a visual distance.
Oh, my gosh.
When you're standing in the cemetery, at one end, you look over and right down are the beaches and the water and the English Channel. You see it. It's right there. You see the bluffs. You have to look down because those are the bluffs. Those were the cliffs that the American soldiers and Canadian soldiers, Allied soldiers, had to master to be able to get over. And that's where they were sitting ducks, because the Germans were sitting right there on top. And it's so visually visceral, you could see it. And you can't even imagine how it's possible to be able to climb over and to be successful. But Baruch Hashem, they were, and we were there. And our goal is, as an organization, we found that there are a number of American Jewish soldiers buried in Normandy, and not only in Normandy, right, but there are about 27 American military cemeteries overseas, and they're buried under Latin crosses. And for us, that's an issue. We feel that that's wrong, and we do the research first to show that they're Jewish, to prove beyond a question that they're Jewish. And then we do research to find a family. There is a agency of the Army, the American Battle Monuments Commission, which is in charge of all of these cemeteries. And they've told us from the very beginning that in order to change a marker, which is our goal,
right,
it's not enough to prove they're Jewish, because who knows what the story is. So we need to find a family member. Only a family member can make that request.
And that's it. If it's not a formal request from the family, they are not going to act on it.
That's correct. Without a formal request, who knows what the story is?
Can we call it one cemetery in Normandy? Would that be accurate? Are there multiple in that area, or is it one massive one?
There's one massive American cemetery. There are other cemeteries
dedicated to American military.
Dedicated to American military.
And do we? And not that I'd expect you to know this off the cuff, but it's possible that you do know off the top of your head. Would you know how many people are buried in that cemetery? Like it's.
I said around 9,500.
9,500.
Around 9,500, give or take.
Service members.
Service members who were killed. Pretty much during the Normandy right. invasion and shortly thereafter,
right.
who are buried there, and roughly around 160-something are buried under Jewish stars.
Right, so meaning, as we would say, l'chatchila, from the beginning of this journey, when they were killed and it was time to honor them properly, 160 did have proper markings, let's put it that way, on their resting place.
We've already done, I think, 3 or 4 there. So
in Normandy.
In that particular cemetery, we've done 23 altogether,
right.
3 or 4 there. Understand that this is not the first time they were buried. This right. is probably the 3rd or 4th time they were buried.
First from the battlefield to a temporary spot.
Exactly, to a second temporary right. spot. And then finally in 1947, they put together this unbelievably, magnificently beautiful, holy, solemn, organized cemetery. And at that point, the Army sent a letter, a telegram to each family of each soldier, giving them the option to bring the remains of their loved one back stateside at Army expense if they so choose.
Interesting.
And in fact, most of them chose.
They want to be near family.
Of course.
Right.
And then not only the Jews, but the right. Christians. People want their Jimmy to be home.
Of course.
So those who are left are those who either the family said, you know what, just leave them. And we know in our cases where the families just found it incredibly too difficult to have to deal a second time opening the wounds.
Right.
Or they just, for some reason, never responded to the inquiry on the part of the Army. So there's a miut, there's a smaller percentage, and many more were killed, but most of them were sent home.
Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter is here visiting us in studio at JMN. We're talking about Operation Benjamin. It's obvious that every function of a service member in World War II was important, including the chaplains, right? They played a major role. I have to assume that once the war ended, and you would know this almost firsthand, once the war ended, in that period of time between 45 and 47, they must also have had a major role just in terms of keeping track of service members and where they were buried temporarily, and then helping, I assume, the authorities follow up. I mean, this is a religious matter to all religions, right?
But it generally was done by the army themselves. They had a very thoughtful and incredible set of offices that dealt with tracking each of these bodies. There's a long, sometimes quite involved file for every single soldier. And we see how one step led to another, all the letters, all the telegrams, mm-hmm. the responses from the families back to the army back to the family. They were extremely
meticulous. So they essentially took full responsibility for it.
And they
didn't have to be urged on by chaplains or others.
And they did a very good job. We don't allege one whit.
Was it similar in World War One? Was there a similar system? Was it similar in Vietnam? Is there an organized system since World War II when it comes to military deaths?
So now I'm in over my head, certainly with World War One. Although we've been asked we're considering once we're done with World War II to go to World War One.
Are there major cemeteries that have American servicemen from World War
One? Our estimates are in World War II. Roughly, and there's obviously no way of knowing for sure until we start to really examine, somewhere around 450. We've done 23, so that's what we say is a school of Arichas Yamim, that I'll be 396 by the time we finish World War II.
Amen to that.
Emir Tzashem. And then we'll have to see where we stand with World War, trying to expedite this and hasten the process.
Understood.
So I don't really know. I'm assuming World War One is the same, and with Vietnam, I believe, and here I am prepared to stand corrected, that the bodies were sent back. Right. I would be surprised if right. there were American military cemeteries in Vietnam.
Right. This whole discussion of Operation Benjamin, as you know, started with Shalom Lamb, who I'm assuming, unless you were with him from the beginning, I assume brought you in, or were you in fact with him from the beginning of this?
So it's actually the other way around.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's fine. I love Shalom.
Gotta give credit where credit's due.
No, it's fine. And I must give credit to Shalom, because we would be absolutely... absolutely nowhere without Shalom. What happened was in 2014, I was leading a group of American Jews on a Jewish history trip. I did that for a while, a very small group of people. We traveled together for about 6 or 7 years to different countries. And the goal was to learn about the Rush, where the Rush lived, to learn about the Rush Bo, where the Rush Bo lived.
Torah commentaries.
Great Torah commentaries, great rabbinic authorities. Right. In the Middle Ages, to study their works in the cities and towns where they actually flourished. And we were in France. There's a great deal in France. We were in Paris. There's a tremendous amount of Jewish history in Paris. The Rashi's grandchildren, the Tosafists, flourished in that area. We went to see the little towns. And then as American citizens, it was in 2014, it was the 70th anniversary of D-Day. So we said, you know, we're here already. Let's take a trip to Normandy as Americans and pay our respects.
I think it just passed the anniversary of D-Day. Was it yesterday?
Maybe? Yes, it was yesterday. Yeah. And so that's how it started. And we went to Normandy. And I'm walking around with 6, 8, 10 sweet friends. And every once in a while, the incredible symmetry of the crosses in every single direction, it looks like you're looking at one cross because it's right. so organized. The symmetry is broken by a Jewish star. And obviously, we were drawn to the Jewish stars. We also paid respects to sure. all of the soldiers. And I began to think there should be more Jewish stars here. I mean, I knew the statistics, 2.8%, but I don't know. There were seas of crosses, which is what there should have been.
Right.
But there should have been more Jewish stars. And it started to nudge me. I set it aside, and then a couple of weeks later, I saw Shalom at a Vart in West Hempstead. We were celebrating an engagement together, and he's an old friend, and he's interested in military history that I always knew.
Right.
And I said, Shalom, you know, I was just recently in Normandy. I think there should have been more Jewish stars. And he went with it. He went home, spent the whole night trying to figure out what the percentages were, and sure enough, There should be a, should have been 100 more Jewish stars based on the percentages. So where did the Jews go? And one thing led to another, led to another, led to another. And surprising to me, I never imagined it would be so entrenched and so successful. And that is absolutely due to Shalom's efforts. We have developed incredibly warm relationship with the Army, the American Battle Monument.
It was not like that from the beginning.
From the beginning, it was very complicated. They didn't know who we were.
Right.
It took them, from the time we got going, the first one turned out to be not Jewish. The name was Mendel Jacobson. Turned out not to be Jewish. His mother was not Jewish. The second one, we found 100% is Jewish, but we're not able to get the permission of the family. It was the only time we had a problem with the family.
Wow, those are two obstacles that could, you know, derail a project.
Yeah, so we were 0-2 when we got started, and we were just mom and pop. We were just the two of us, and Shalom has a mechut and Steve Lamar, who was extremely helpful to us. I had a student in Yeshiva College. I teach in Yeshiva. I had a student, Yaakov Ellenbogen, who I asked to spend a couple of hours poking around. So we were 0-2, and we finally found Benjamin Garadetsky. That's why we're Operation Benjamin. He was our first successful. And we found out that he's Jewish, 100%. We were told that we had to find a family. We found a family. And it took 18 months for them to okay. Now it takes a month because we have such a warm relationship that Shalom
and ends, a track record, et cetera.
Yeah, they know that we're serious.
Shalom, and I'm assuming you were at each one, right?
No, I was not at...
Were you at that one? Were you at the first one?
I was at the first one. I was at the first one. And Shalom and Steve are extremely, extremely helpful. We were in Manila, the Philippines.
Right.
We did three separate days of marker changes. We were all at the first one. That is, Shalom and I were in Manila. We did five in one day right before COVID. We did another one in the middle of COVID that nobody could get to, but we worked with the local Jewish community. And then... Shalom and others went back just this past February, but I work at YU. I teach.
Can't be at everything, huh?
Can't be at everything.
And the Philippines, do we know how many service members, American service members there? Like, is it also a large number?
I think they're in that one, in the Manila American Military Cemetery, I believe there are 17,500.
That's even more than Normandy.
Double.
Wow.
Double.
I would never have even known that. Wow.
Well, this is the Japanese theater.
Right.
We've been focusing till now on
Europe, yeah.
And part of the reason is, speaking of Europe, that American Jewish soldiers were afraid to be identified as Jews because it's bad enough if they were POWs in American, but now to add
Jewish
to the
POW, right.
Jewish POW. So they, and we know that they were discriminated against, and we know that they were tortured way more than other POWs were mistreated. And that accounts partially for why it ended up that they were under a cross through no fault. It was
all right. What's it like? And I don't like these types of questions, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
All right.
What is it like on Memorial Day, which all of us feel a tinge of something? After all, you know, there are some sincere people on social media that do remind us that there's something to the day here in the United States, remembering those who gave their lives so we could live in luxury and freedom, as I always like to point out. What's it like on Memorial Day to walk through that cemetery? We'll talk about the Jewish aspect in a moment, because that video to me was jarring. I said that to you off the air, which I regret. I don't like doing that off the air. But we will review how that ceremony took place. But what is the feeling walking through that cemetery on the anniversary that we consider so vital, Memorial Day?
It's extremely touching. It's extremely moving. It's extremely somber. This was, when we were there, Memorial Day was a week before the anniversary of D-Day. So
Right. There's
a lot of thinking about the forthcoming D-Day. Right. On Sunday, the day before Memorial Day, the American Battle Monuments Commission had a major ceremony in Normandy. And reflected deeply on what happened and on the service and sacrifice of American servicemen. As a son of a soldier, my father was a chaplain, for me it was particularly resonant. I think part of what drives me and motivates me in this entire effort is somehow I'm channeling my father's caring deeply about soldiers. It was very, very special, very solemn.
And it's hard not to focus on the sacrifice that so many thousands made. I mean, if we are going to continue to enjoy, and whether we will or not is something we could debate on the political front, but if we're going to continue to enjoy the freedom, the luxury, the incredible independence that we as Jews and as Americans, and then, of course, Jewish Americans have in this country, if you're sincere, if you have, you know, if you have some seichel, as they say, it's hard not to appreciate the incredible sacrifice that they made to set this all up for us.
You're absolutely right. And then you walk through the rows, and every single marker is another life, is another family, is another story.
Is there a date of birth and date of death on it?
Every single marker has the name of the soldier, the date of when the soldier was killed, the rank of the soldier, and the state that the soldier came from.
Boy.
On the crosses and on the Jewish stars.
Could you imagine if they added the age? That would be even more jarring, seeing, you know, at what age they sacrificed their lives.
You could tell the incredible power and passion. And every single one of them was a life that was cut short. And we need to have gratitude. They made the ultimate sacrifice.
Unbelievable.
So we could walk around.
Now, when it comes to, and you know which video I mean, the one that was circulating of the actual ceremony where the cross is lifted up from the and removed from the space where the marker is, and the Magen and David, the Star of David, is then inserted. And by the way, I'm saying it in a very rigid fashion, but that's how it looked. It looked like it's a very, you know, cemeteries in general, those of us who've been to cemeteries and have been to funerals, it's usually a haphazard type of activity, you know, putting the body in, having the grave covered, lots of dirt flying all over, etc. This is a well-organized, well-manicured, and efficient, what seems to be a machine-like type of operation.
That is correct, because we're seeing the end. We're not burying a soldier, so the soldier's remains are there. The soldier is covered. It takes generally 7 or 8 hours to dislodge a marker.
Wow.
Understand that these markers have been there for 75 years. It would be impossible for us to come and them to start working on it.
Right.
We'd be there a whole day. Mm-hmm. So in every single case, 1 or 2 or 3 days before, they start working on this. And by the time we come, the basic cross marker has already been removed and replaced with little divots.
Right. Just to keep it in place.
Just to keep it in place, right, so it shouldn't topple over.
Right.
So it's very easy at that point. It's very smooth. It just picks up. But you have to understand that it didn't just happen that way. And that's why it's so well oiled, because it's all set up in advance. Used to be in the first bunch of marker changes that they used to have the Jewish star marker on the side of the road. So they would pick up the marker with the Latin cross and carry it maybe 100 feet to the side and then pick it up and bring it. The last ones that we did, and the ones that we did in Normandy, they had two little stanchions, and one was empty, and one had the Jewish star. And then they picked up the Latin cross smoothly, picked it up, walked 4 feet, and gently put it down on the empty stanchion, then went over and picked up the Jewish star and put it in. And when they put it in, they put it in the same way.
Right.
They don't put it all the way in. That's going to be tomorrow. That's right. Going to be 2 days from now when they really, really implant it.
But they set it in place.
But they set it in place so that we can continue with our service.
Right.
I have a formulation that I fell into my head, the very first one in Normandy, after Benjamin Gorodetsky's star was placed. I, some reason, just walked over and I said, Private Gorodetsky, on behalf of the United States of America, on behalf of our citizens, we're very grateful to you for having made the ultimate sacrifice. And Benjamin, on behalf of the Jewish people, we welcome you home.
Wow.
And I stopped. And that became the moniker that is recited. It's almost like a liturgical text.
Yeah, like a mole.
like a mole. On behalf of the Jewish people, we welcome you home.
When you're there, do you try to say a mole in Kaddish?
Every time.
There's always a minyan.
Yes, the first one, Garadetsky, was hard. So right. I knew somebody who knew somebody who had a summer home. And there were Jews from Paris. The word got out. It's a three-hour train ride. Jews from Paris came to make sure we had a minyan. We had family members, but between us and the family members, it was not enough. And it's extremely moving.
And in the Philippines, are you able to gather enough people?
Yes, we're very fortunate that there is a wonderful community in Manila that we have connected to who have been extremely helpful for us. And the Israeli ambassador in
has joined
Manila
you?
Joined us.
Wow.
The American ambassador was with us in the Philippines. It's extremely powerful. They both spoke. They both participated. The American ambassador was planning on staying. Remember, we did five.
Right.
He was planning on just speaking, showing up, and leaving. But he was so touched that he stayed with us and went from grave to grave.
Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter is here. I'm fascinated sometimes by minutia of these operations, so bear with me. The workers that are doing all this, as you described it, removal, the Mug and Dovid being inserted, are they military people? Are they?
No, they're local. They're local Frenchmen.
Because
who
they
are
seemed
hired.
More distinguished than your average cemetery worker,
yeah.
Or is the United States military Makbid to take people that are dignified enough to do this?
I think the military is so committed to do their work with the utmost level of respect that they convey the incredible importance of that to the people who work for them. These are locals who work for them.
But you feel nothing but cooperation and respect from them.
Absolutely, absolutely. We feel mutual admiration.
Right. And some of them may actually be, you know, from a segment of Christianity. So then, and they're removing the cross, you could see some, you know, I don't know about resentment, but certainly might be difficult for them to, you know, to do that, especially when you know the goals sometimes of those of the Christian faith, but nonetheless, they're cooperating.
It's so interesting that you say that because at every marker change, Shalom speaks, and he addresses that question head on. And he says, the fact that we're removing a symbol is complicated. And he talks about the fact that the cross sometimes was helpful to Jews in times when they
and
were.
And many times not.
And most of the time not.
Right.
But we bid fond farewell to these silent civil sentinels who have stood watch over this soldier for many, many decades.
That's
and
a
we
good
express
point.
Our gratitude to them. So we bid them a fond farewell. It's not as if good riddance. We have a great deal of respect for them, and we are grateful to them, and now we're moving on to do the right thing.
I mean, you need to understand how important that is to convey what you just said in that manner.
Yes.
I mean, that's such an important piece to this whole thing.
Because we're speaking to superintendents.
But I worry that's correct. But not just that, you're also speaking spiritually to a degree to whatever was in fact, you know, watching over our boys, you know, at that point.
That's right. It's hard to do because it is a cross, but it's Magia Lahem. It's appropriate to do, and it's the right thing to do. And Shalom does it magnificently.
See, I always think that this type of attitude, as you just described, is limited to, I'll say our, even though you might argue we're not from the same one, but I'll say from our generation and before. I'm hoping that Jewish leadership, and you did travel with some young Jewish leaders, spiritual leaders, on some of these trips. I hope they get how important that piece is to this whole thing.
I would hope so, too. Today, it's harder to make a case for sensitivity such as this, because there's such divisions and such, I would say also lack of sophistication and connections.
Sometimes ignorance, frankly.
And a lot of ignorance and a lot of bias.
Right.
But which you know, it's well-founded.
Right.
But
you're doing your best.
You got to do what you got to do, you got to do it right.
Right, exactly. So now I would guess that you're up to date on what the future holds. Are we working now, Operation Benjamin, on more Jewish soldiers that will likely have their markers replaced at some
please
point?
Please God. There are 30 now in the hopper.
There are 30 names on your desk at the moment?
30 names on the desk in various stages of completion.
Any of them close?
Yeah. Number
with
of them
family
are close.
Ready to make the request?
With families ready to make the request. And some in case, I believe families have already made the request.
And is that Europe or the Philippines?
I think in both.
Wow. So you got to go back, or someone's got to go back.
Oh, yeah. We've got to go back. There's a lot to do. We have a genealogist, Rachel Silverman, who is doing the massive heavy lifting together with Shalom on this. She's the one who does all the research to define, demonstrate that the soldier is Jewish and then finds the family. And she's constantly, Shalom keeps on finding and working with her very closely. So we're churning, we're going, we're doing. We need money. If we had more money, then we would be able to hire more genealogists.
And again, you'll tell me if this is too much of a stretch. But religiously, the money is being used for Chesed Shel Emes, correct?
Totally.
Even though that person's already buried, and that's how we normally associate Chesed Shel Emes, you know, right. Burying someone who otherwise would not be buried or whose burial would be postponed. Mm-hmm. Here, they're already buried, but nonetheless, to have the proper marker and to pay to fund for the proper marking is a Chesed Shel Emes, no?
There's no doubt. I would like you and your listening audience to understand that when we first got started, and we discovered that they're Jewish and proved that they're Jewish, we try to see if there's a way that we could disinter them and bring them to Kever Yisrael, to bring them to a Jewish cemetery. That would be the ultimate goal.
Right.
But that was absolutely not going to be an option for us. Once they were buried the third or fourth time, I mentioned earlier that the families did have a chance to bring them back.
But chose not to.
This is it.
And do we really consider this a Christian cemetery, or because of the military aspect, it may not even be?
I'm not sure halachically exactly what it is, but I would prefer that a Jew would be in a Jewish cemetery.
Right.
It's certainly not a Jewish cemetery. Right. But at this point, the only thing that we could do, which is so important, is to place a marker over the remains of this soldier that represents their ancestral faith.
Right.
And to identify them in a way that they identify themselves for their entire lives and their families. This is a massive chesed, and I want to add something else. One of the things that motivates me is not only this incredible chesed shalemis that whatever the neshama is, whatever the soul is, that they should be hovering around a marker that identifies with us, but I want more people to recognize when they walk into the cemetery, either virtually or in person, that there are more Jewish stars.
Right.
Especially now, when there are such complications with Jewish life in America, I want people to know that there were more Jews who made the ultimate sacrifice for America, for democracy, and for freedom.
And what you're saying has been an actual issue at times, where political leaders have used the opportunity to stress how Jews did not help in the war effort, but getting us to the point of freedom and independence.
Yes.
And it was left only to the Christian boys. And sure enough, as we know, that's a complete falsehood.
It's a complete falsehood, but I want it to be in their faces.
Right.
I want them to see more and more. So if we could put another 100 Jewish stars there and another 400 all over the cemeteries, to me, that's also an incredibly important consideration. So it's a religious consideration, and I think it's a sociological, social consideration. I think this is a real tzedakah. This is a real chesed. It's a real chesed shel emes. They can't do anything for us, the families. We don't ask for money. We tell them right away.
Right.
As soon as we contact the family, not looking for money.
Right.
This is all on us.
Look, with the disposable income in the Jewish world, there are better things to do than what many of us do with that income. So this would be in that category, and everybody should certainly consider it. As you know, there are families associated with. Oh, you have to go. I apologize, but I could do this for the next hour.
I know, but I have.
Is it a class?
It's almost a class.
Can I go and beg your students for some more time? As you know, there are members, there are people in the community, families in our community, in our greater Jewish community, who are very much associated with us here at this network. I'm referring, of course, to the Fagans and the Adelsbergs, et cetera, who have gotten involved. If a family or anybody out there, a Balabas, wants to be part of Operation Benjamin, you are welcoming that at this moment.
Very, very much so. We have a website. I urge anyone who's interested to first start with the website, www.operationbenjamin.org, and then go from there and be in touch with Shalom, be in touch with me, and we're looking for support, and we're looking for fellow travelers.
And
very important for
And
us.
You can make a donation literally on the site if you want to participate
in the Chesed Shalem,
as said Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter just described here on the air. We didn't even get an opportunity to talk about the role of Jewish service members during the war itself, but I guess we'll have an opportunity to future
You'll invite
time.
Me back. I have no choice.
But to invite. What is the topic of today's lecture, by the way? What are we? We're sending you off to address the students on what topic?
I'm finishing up a unit on Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik.
Wow.
This is the 120th birthday, the 30th Yahrzeit. I have a chabura at Reed's. I have a group of boys at Yeshiva University. And I study with them what they want. There's no special curriculum. I always
You take requests.
Them. I take requests. I take requests, and then I do the research and put material together. They requested, after Pesach, they requested Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik, and so that's we're wrapping it up today.
And a lot of personal experiences go into it?
A lot of personal stories, yes, yes. So that's a third reason for you to invite me back. I'll be happy to share.
Let's
all
not
kinds
wait
of
to
stories.
The 121st. Let's
yes.
let's try to do it during
I'm
the
in.
120.
I'm in, Nachum. It's really a pleasure to be here.
I really appreciate you being here, and thank you so much. And I look forward to our next encounter.
Thank
and
you
good
very
luck with
much
Operation
so.
Benjamin.
Thank
what
you.
What an incredible thing to do, and that Memorial Day experience for you must have been just completely off the charts.
Very, very special, very precious. We look forward to going back. We look forward to continuing our work. We look forward to support to make this possible.
Go to the website, operationbenjamin.org. Make a donation and learn more about the incredible work they are doing to preserve the memories of American Jewish servicemen and women who made the ultimate sacrifice defending the cause of freedom during World War II and allowing us to live in the lap of luxury and freedom and convenience and independence here in the United States of America. More coming up. It is a Wednesday morning edition of JM in the AM.